Yeah. And
we're gonna open the Senate Education Committee, February 23rd, 2017. It's great to have everybody here today. We have a couple bills up today. Actually, we have five bills, but three of them are identical. It took us a long time to figure that one out. And then two are similar. So we're going to start by opening a public hearing on Senate Bills 253 and 438 that have to do with student loan transparency. I'll have a short explanation by our administrator. Go ahead. So you can talk about both of them.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 253 requires institutions of higher education to provide annual student loan fact sheets to students receiving student loans starting in the 2018-19 academic year. It requires fact sheets to list the estimate of the total amount of loans received by the student, an estimate of the total amount the student will owe upon graduating, an estimate of the amount, including interest, that the student will have to pay each month, and the percentage of the borrowing limit the student has reached for each type of federal loan received. Senate Bill 438 requires institutions of higher education to provide annual student loan fact sheets to students receiving student loans starting in the 2018-19 academic year. It defines educational loan an institution of higher education. It requires entities that provide loan information to institutions of higher education to provide institutions with a fact sheet for each student who is enrolled and receives an educational loan. It requires the fact sheets to list the estimate of the total amount of loans received by the student, an estimate of the total amount the student will owe upon graduating, an estimate of the amount, including interest, that the student will have to pay each month, an estimate of the total number of monthly payments the student will have to make, and an estimate of the date on which the loan amount will be paid in full. It requires institutions of higher education to provide these fact sheets annually during student orientation.
Okay. And we have people who represent all of these bills. So why don't we start out with our Attorney General, Rosenblum. You can have Senator Taylor. Do you want to come up at this time, too? We'll have all three of you come up.
Thank you. How are you?
And we'll start out with our Attorney General.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Linthicum, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ellen Rosenblum, and I am the Oregon Attorney General. I rarely have the opportunity to testify in front of this committee, so I'm especially honored to be here with you today. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 253. When I was sworn in on January 4th for my second term as your Attorney General, one of the promises I made was to help Oregonians of all ages who are saddled by student debt. This has been a priority for the entirety of my administration. As the Attorney General, I serve as a member of the National Association of Attorneys General, more commonly referred to as NAG. And as a member of NAG, I know, I join with other attorneys general from all parts of the country in discussing the common problems facing our states. And in recent years, NAG has become increasingly concerned with the ever-growing problem of unmanageable student debt. Just this past May, serving in my capacity as sort of the Western chapter of NAG, which is called CWAG, the Conference of Western Attorneys General, I hosted an all-day program here in Oregon, in Portland, entitled Student Debt, the Obligation of a Lifetime. I put a question mark at the end of that, kind of to try to be hopeful that perhaps the answer would be no. At this conference, a diverse range of stakeholders offered a widely shared reality. Student debt has indeed become the obligation of a lifetime, an anchor that weighs heavy on the decision to buy a house, to start a business, to get married, have a child, all those life important decisions. There's mounting evidence that student debt has risen to such incredible levels that it has become a serious headwind against the economic growth of the nation as a whole. Students attending Oregon's colleges come from diverse social and economic backgrounds, of course. But one thing they increasingly have in common is their reliance on student loans to pay for their education. Unfortunately, student loan debt is now the second largest category of consumer debt in the country, second only to home mortgages. In fact, since 2004, education debt in the United States has more than tripled, totaling well over $1 trillion today. In fact, I hear the number 1.4. We're verging on $1.4 trillion. Perhaps it's not surprising, then, that Americans collectively owe more on their student loans than they do on either their auto loans or credit cards. Here in Oregon, the graduating class of 2015 saw 63% of its students graduate with student loan debt. The tremendous cost of higher education has placed a particular burden on older adults. Although most student loan borrowers are young adults between the ages of 18 and 39, consumers age 60 and older are the fastest growing segment of the student loan market. According to the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the number of older student loan borrowers has quadrupled since 2005, and their ranks are set to increase dramatically in the coming years. Roughly 7 million Americans age 50 and over owe a collective $205 billion in federal student loan debt, and one out of every three are already in default. While many of these older Americans are still paying off their own educational debt late into life, an increasing number are driven into debt not by their own education, but by having taken loans out on behalf of their children or perhaps their grandchildren. We are fortunate to have a number of excellent institutions of higher education here in Oregon, and those schools have opened new doors for thousands of people. Our students are some of the best and the brightest, not only from Oregon, but from around the world. These students come to our institutions of higher education with the same hopes and dreams that led generations of people before them to seek their college degrees, a space to not only figure out what career path to choose, but how to grow into their dreams. I personally have incredibly fond memories of my time at the University of Oregon. I'm a double duck, first as an undergraduate and later as a law student. But when I attended the U of O not so very long ago, college was far less expensive. I won't even tell you how much I paid because I don't want people throwing anything at me in this room. I feel so bad telling some of the younger folks what my education cost. And frankly, that's putting it mildly. Between 1978 and 2012, college tuition and fees have increased by an estimated 1,120%. And for some perspective, in that same time period, medical expenses increased by about 600%, and the price of food increased by about 240%. In 2012, the University of Indiana was struggling to find a way to deal with the growing amount of student debt and was troubled by an increase in student loan defaults. That year, the university decided to try something new, and they began sending an email to their student borrowers telling them what their monthly payment would be after graduation and the potential total payoff amount of their loans. When students received that information, it had an almost immediate effect on their willingness to borrow. Almost immediately, students armed with a more understandable notion of the impact of their debt began making different decisions. In that first year, federal undergraduate Stafford loan disbursements at the university dropped by 11%, or $31 million. And by May of 2016, Indiana University officials said that their undergraduate borrowing had dropped by over 16% since 2012. And I want to be clear, these students were not dropping out of school. They were just spending less money to go to school, taking out less by way of loans. After seeing the success of that initiative, in 2015, the Indiana legislature took IU's innovation statewide with a law requiring every institution to give student borrowers the same information that IU provided their students. The following year, Nebraska passed an almost identical bill with unanimous bipartisan support. And as we speak, our neighbors to the north in the Washington legislature are also considering a bill that replicates the Indiana legislation. All three states report that they were able to implement the requirements of this proposal with a minimum fiscal impact. Members of the committee, the bill that's in front of you today requires institutions of higher education in Oregon to provide students with basic information about their education loans that is easy to understand and will help them to make more informed borrowing decisions. Just like the Indiana initiative, each year students must be given an estimate of the total amount of education loans they have received at that time and an estimate of the total amount of education loans the student will owe or is likely to owe upon graduation. Most importantly, Senate Bill 253 requires a statement of the monthly amount a student will pay after graduation. I cannot emphasize enough the importance of this data point. The financial obligations of higher education are enormous, and the scale can be hard to understand. Asking a student who's often early in their financial independence and often only months removed from living with their parents to understand the magnitude of assuming $40,000 in debt is often unrealistic. And in Oregon, the average, I believe, is somewhere around $27,000 per student of education debt. It is far easier to understand a debt that's expressed in terms of a certain amount owed per month, whether it's 300 or 800 or in some cases several thousand, a figure that can be compared to rent, books, gas, car payments, even coffee. Providing our students with this easy-to-understand information each year will give them a better sense of how their education loans will impact their lives upon graduation. And equipped with this knowledge, Oregon students will be able to make better informed borrowing decisions. And that is something that I hope each of you will be able to join me, in supporting. So thank you for allowing me to testify. Obviously, my voice is telling me to stop talking. And so I'm happy to take questions at an appropriate time. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator?
Thank you, Chair Roblin. So I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 253. No surprise that our lovely Attorney General, we've been working on this together through her office, and I've been working together with through Erin Knott on this, and she already covered a lot of the data points that I think are important, but I won't go through all of that. I think the real takeaway is that the reason we should pass this bill is that it is based on some research that has occurred to show that student debt will go down by students making better decisions when they take their loans out. And so I just want to emphasize that the research done by the Pew Charitable Trust, when Indiana University began sending students annual letters that estimate their total loan debt and future month payments, they saw their undergraduate borrowing drop by 18%. And that is very significant in one's life. So the whole idea is to have students really understand the decisions that they're making before they take out the loan, and then hopefully, ideally, maybe go through school a little more quickly, maybe make some different decisions about how they spend money on housing, et cetera. So I just wanted to voice my support for the bill.
Thank you. Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to testify on what is clearly a bill that has broad support among and bipartisan support at that. It matters little to me of the three bills that achieve or attempt to achieve the same sort of objective. I think it's really unconscionable that we have people put in a situation where the credit decision isn't connected with consequences. The other thing we need to keep in mind is that the purposes to which these loans can be put are not books and tuition only, but books, tuition, rent, food. In fact, they are a lifestyle loan. Now, that may be a harsh judgment looking from my perspective, but a person can find themselves very deeply in debt. They can look at the value received, which is extremely beneficial to them over a lifetime. But when they realize they put living expenses on a deferred payment plan, it's certainly the antithesis of an intelligent decision to pay as you go. They are going deeper and deeper in debt. They're going to be paying longer. And there's no point at which they have a sit down for full disclosure of the cost of credit until after the amount is fixed. If it is a federal lender, they also have to choose a method of repayment. And those methods of repayment vary vastly in their terms and conditions. And those methods, if they were known to the student borrower at the beginning of their educational career, they may have structured their education differently, timed it differently, or borrowed less money. So the point is, we all know, I think, an informed borrower tends to make better decisions. These decisions are being made by young people in a transitional period. They're going from high schools to colleges. They don't have a lot of experience. They're stunned by the cost of their education, and including all of the other ancillary costs that they have. It's probably the best place to have somebody sit down with them with a disclosure statement and tell them, if you borrowed this much money, these are the consequences, and this is the repayment schedule. Senate Bill 438 attempts to do just that. It requires disclosure by the lender. There are other versions that require disclosure by the institution. There may be some confidentiality concerns about making the institution a third party that has information that's personal to the borrower. The folks in Indiana have solved that problem, or at least they have a workable solution to that problem. There's also Nebraska, which provides us with another model that we can study. But the fact of the matter is, I know of no situation where a borrower doesn't need, and in fact isn't owed, full disclosure of the cost of their borrowing. Mr. Chairman, did you also order a public hearing on Senate Bill 439?
Okay, we're going to do that one because there's three of those bills, too.
Okay.
But if you want to wait for that
Yes, one, sir.
That would be perfect. So, any questions for this panel? I'm really pleased you're there. I could be sitting over there because I'm also on this bill, but you both did such a great job. It's not necessary for me to repeat that. I will tell you that the parents at North Bend High School are going to feel sad that you chose their name. They had a program like Aspire that Aspire actually used to pattern themselves out, called the Naggers, because the parents came in and nagged the kids unmercifully to get scholarship applications done and all this other kind of stuff. So they love their name. So I'm going to have to tell them that they are sharing their name with
Please let them know I'd love to come visit with them. And we can kind of compare notes.
Yeah. So thank you very much, and thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We have Mike Sullivan, Lamar Wise. Who's that? Oh, Cindy Robert. And do you want to, Senator Farioli, do you want to go sit with Senator Girard, who wants to work with you on the next bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I thought I was instructed to stay after
class. You were, but then she pointed out that there were three other people that wanted to talk on this bill. So before I do that, I'll have you and Senator Girard come up. Thank you very much for that. Who was the other person?
Go ahead. You got called first.
Lamar Wise, is there a Lamar in here? Did I get that wrong? Somebody else has signed up?
I think okay. Lamar stepped out.
Okay.
For the record, my name is... Excuse me. Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and Senate Education Committee. For the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I am the political director for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers, commonly known as AWPPW. AWPPW supports 438 along with the other four, and I'll call them the Gang of Five. I'm hoping that this testimony will, do for the others. Okay. I want to personally make remarks on this subject. I started this job in 2005. I already knew the problem of student loan debt, as we already had one of our sons in college. Ballot Measure 5 passed and helped cause tuitions to go up by 90%. Well, what do you do? I mean, if you have a kid who can play baseball, you get him a baseball mitt. It turns out the second and third were as bright as the first, so you supply the education. Knowing this, like I said, in 2005, I went around the House and tried to get a sponsor for free higher education for all, part of the 16-point plan of the Labor Party in 1996. I did find one, Representative Buckley, and Representative Buckley supported it. It came to the House chambers, and 3 days it was carried over, and I was kind of mystified to the point Representative Buckley could see me up in the gallery, and he came up and told me we don't have enough support in our caucus to move the bill. I heard later from the Republicans that they couldn't support it because it was an entitlement. Yes, it is an entitlement. It's an entitlement for kids that have the smarts to go to college to get their education. It entitles them with their degree when they pay more, get paid more in their lifetime to pay more taxes to support the government that we all say that we want. We have to invest in the youth of this country for the future of this country. I think Germany does an excellent job. You can go to any university in Germany, even as an international student, and you have to pay a mere $200 fee to do so. I'm going to ratchet up to my wife now, who is a nurse instructor for the Schmeckede Junior College System. 30 years of experience as a critical care nurse, did all the education work for Willamette Valley. As she started her job as a nurse instructor, she was informed that she would have to have a master's in nursing. Already had a master's in early childhood development. Wasn't good enough. There's a crucial shortage of, well, all medical people, but nurses. Doctors are great, but I've had 6 operations in 30 months. They go home. Nurses are there 24 hours a day. So we had to take out a loan. And my wife sat there for 18 months in front of the computer, 2 hours, 12 hours a day, plus working a full-time job teaching nursing students. And then we got the bill for the loan. It's $34,000. I'm not a spring chicken, you know, and there was no real way to go around it. And I'm going to leave my testimony with a few bullet points that I have. The federal government will make $80 billion on student loans in this decade. Why? I'm not sure that the government is in the idea of making money off student loans. Perhaps it's the 15 years of endless war costing $13 trillion and maiming and killing our troops. You cannot discharge a student loan like you can as a bank can on a loan. There's really no way to default. And you can get a better interest rate on your car than you can. A 2-year RN graduate will make 1/3 more than a nurse instructor. And this provides an hourglass. There's a great demand to get in, there's a shortage of instructors, and there's a demand on the outside. So you reward nurse instructors with 1/3 less pay? That doesn't work. Not for us. The Accreditation Commission of Education and Nursing mandates the nurse instructors have a master's in nursing, but is now contemplating removing the requirement due to a shortage of faculty. My wife received no financial assistance. I think that nursing is a special calling. I think this is a public policy nightmare. And if anybody wants to talk to me that they don't like to pay taxes, I'll be glad to accommodate them, because I'm quite irritated by this. You know, what's to be said? Where's the future for other people, other nurse instructors? We have to do better. And it's really the federal government. I am a proponent of free higher education for all. It should be for everyone that has the ability to go to college. I'll answer any questions that anyone would have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Roble and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Lamar Wise, and I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Student Association. First off, would like to echo that free college for all would be great, and we're very supportive of that concept. I'm also here speaking in support of Senate Bill 253, and the reason why that is because students in general do support transparency in terms of student loans, and any measure speaking to that is something that we are looking for. And in general, we know that transparency has been a major theme in Oregon, and students also believe on a local level that this is also important, especially for families who don't necessarily have the resources to. Do what is necessary to have the correct financial planning for going through an institution. We do believe that this aids in that and helps students make the right decision. We do also want to ensure that the proper conversations are happening around student loans and student loan repayment on a local level. We see this bill as a form of information that can be that students can arm themselves with while going through the institution, but we also want to ensure that we're not using this to deter students away from attending higher education, and really giving institutions the resources necessary to do the proper coaching and also to do the proper preparation for families to attend. So Just wanted to reiterate that and say that on the record. So thank you all very much for your time. I'm going to have to hop back over because I also have to testify in House Higher Education. So thank you all so much. And
really we'll hold all our questions.
Oh, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert, and I represent the Oregon Alliance of Colleges and Independent Colleges and Universities. Those are the 18 private nonprofit colleges in Oregon. We represent about 35,000 students, 20% of the state's undergraduate enrollment, 45% of the state's graduate student enrollment, 32% of our students receive Pell Grants, and 92% of our students receive financial aid. I've just passed out to you a packet, and I'm hoping you don't get stuck on the first page and that we can continue a conversation. I think in the last time I supplied that to someone, they were so shocked that they didn't hear anything I said afterwards, so I'm hoping that I can relay to you some information. Oregon's nonprofit institutions do not provide loans. We do not finance students. We do not facilitate them getting public or private loans. What we do is we help them to access information about the grants that they're getting. The grants that they don't, in scholarships they don't have to pay back, and the federal loans that they are receiving. And that is the information that we include in a sheet every year when they start school. You have an example right in front of you. Why do we include that? Because all federal loans impose reports, requirements, and entrance and exit exam requirements. So because the U.S. Department of Education requires that counseling, they do offer it online at studentloans.gov, and there the students can find a comprehensive review of the terms and of their loan and repayment and financial literacy concepts and ways to manage money while in college, repay student loans, and avoid default. The counseling, we believe, is clear, comprehensive, and presented in a way that actually works well for students these days with some embedded videos to enhance students' understanding of what's about to occur in their financial future. Additionally, schools can, in fact, do the enrollment counseling, the entrance counseling, and the exit counseling on their own if they choose to. But whether we do it or we have the student go to the federal government and do it, we have to document that the student has completed this requirement. We have to document that they have received the information about their loans and about repayment. I do want to emphasize here, when it comes to information about loan repayment, and the fact sheets that are being looked for in this legislation, we do not have access to private loan information. So any sheet that we share with the student saying this is how much debt you'll have when you get out of school, this is how much debt you're going to have to pay off with interest, this is how much your monthly payment would be, any information we provide about that is only going to include their federal loans. So it's not really a whole picture. Private loans are not something we have access to. So along with the entrance and exit counseling that we do, some of our schools work with a third party provider called SALT. It's a student access, it's an American Student Assistance Program, and SALT helps kids learn more about financial responsibility and how to deal with their loans, and it's an ongoing counseling program for the 4 years they're there. And I was asked in the other committee what SALT is an abbreviation for, and it's not an abbreviation for anything. SALT actually, as it turns out, was the first currency. And so that's how the whole program on financial responsibility got named. Clever, huh? I just wanted you to know about the different things that we do. I have in that packet for you both a letter that shows what we tell a student when they're coming in and about their loans. I have in there a disclosure notice, a sample disclosure notice, the promissory note that has to be done and information that goes along with that when the kids are working online, and then an example of what the entrance and next exam requirements are. So I put that all in your packet. I just wanted to provide you with this information. We want you to understand what we're already doing, what's already required federally, and what we actually have no access to when it comes to private loans. I am concerned that if we move forward, we make sure that we don't burden the financial aid offices with more paperwork. Maybe we can figure out ways to improve upon the paperwork that's already being done. Or perhaps on the frequency. I had a conversation with the Attorney General before this, and she mentioned maybe having this done more often is the key. So I think those are things to discuss, but I urge you to try not to be too duplicative in what financial aid officers have to do, because it does nothing to help us lower the cost of school when we're spending that much time.
Thank you. Any questions for these? Thank you very much. I do appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, so that's all of the people, unless there's anybody else that wants to talk about. Oh, there is someone who was waiting in the, didn't get his name on the list. Good.
I'll be brief.
Okay.
Caleb Hayes on behalf of the College of Osteopathic Medicine of the Pacific Northwest, sometimes known as the DO School down in Lebanon. We share the concerns of the Alliance. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Thank you. One last time. Anyone out there? We will keep you informed about how we may put these together, what we could do, and we'll talk to the sponsors of all the bills. But thank you for your interest, and we're going to close our public hearings on Senate Bill 253 and 438, and we're going to open a work session on Senate bills, open a public hearing on Senate bills 439, 565, and 595, which, if you look at them, look very similar. Thank you for coming. And we'll have Senator Girard will have a short statement about, I'll just pick any one of them.
I'll do Senate Bill 565, okay, so which is actually my bill.
We're going to have her give an explanation of 565 then, so go for it.
Okay.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 565 and the other two. Establish a tax credit for amounts paid as interest on qualified education loans. They define qualified education loans using the U.S. Internal Revenue Code. The bills allow the Department of Revenue to establish rules and prescribe a form for taxpayers' use. They allow credit to be claimed by non-residents proportionally. They apply to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2017. They become effective 91 days after the legislature adjourns. So you guys.
Thank you, Chair Robin.
Senator Girard.
I'm Fred Girard, State Senator from District 9. You've seen this bill last year, or 2 years ago, I guess. And basically, you heard the horror stories about student debt. Most of you know that I lived the life of education. I graduated from dental school with maybe $15,000 worth of debt. I worked, and my family helped me out some. But if you compare that to today, the average is probably around $200,000, and it can go as high as $400,000. And for someone like myself, that's almost incomprehensible how you get started with that much debt. It's just, I think there's a misperception by students that they're going to make a tremendous amount of money. If you're a dentist, you go, oh, well, I only need to cut five crown preps or do this. But you don't realize how much it's going to cost you to do that, your overhead, and the fact you got to pay rent and taxes and whatever else. And so paying back student debt, if you talk to lawyers because of the unemployment rate between them, it's really getting frightening. And as you know, the amount of debt for students is actually more than all credit card debt now. So we need to do something. It's not fair to this generation to keep tacking on higher and higher rates at higher education. So this bill does one thing, and that is make a tax credit for all interest paid by student loans. I like that approach because if someone's educated in the state of Oregon and takes off to Florida, they don't get the tax credit. But if they stick in here and they are part of our job base and are paying towards Oregon's economy, then they get a tax credit. The big problem, and Chair Roblin, what we really want is to know how much this would cost, because we just don't have any accurate data, so we need to get from the Revenue Department or from Revenue here an estimate as to what the actual cost is. So if we do have some grand bargain that maybe this could be slipped in and we can actually bona fideably help students, I really believe in the just in the deepest part of my heart, That's the biggest failure my generation has had, and the biggest failure that this legislature has had is student debt and how we treat kids coming out of school. And so I just don't want to leave without accomplishing something to help ratify that. And I guess that's pretty much all I have to say.
Anything to say for Senator Farrelly? I know he talked to you before he left. I know he had
his bills,
but yeah.
I'll quote. Thank you. I'll be Senator Farioli would probably say, Gerard's really smart, just do what he says.
That's good, thank you.
Or not.
Or not, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee, for allowing me to speak on Senate Bill 595 and the liking. For the record, my name is Jason Dudash. I have been a resident of Marion County my entire life, and I'm currently interning with Senator Tim Canope. I'm a junior at Corbin University. I am majoring in criminal justice and minoring in forensic psychology. I personally came from a family that did not necessarily see the value or necessity of higher education. And so I've had to largely figure out the process of college on my own, including how to pay for it. And I estimate by the time of next year, I will be around $50,000 in debt with student loans when I graduate. The current interest rates on my loans vary from 3.9 to 6.4%. And as you know, kind of reiterating what we heard from the Attorney General earlier, I'm not alone. Across America, students owe nearly $1.4 trillion in student loan debt. And I believe that when we discuss this topic, it often gets categorized as a millennial problem. But like she said, the numbers of seniors carrying student debt into their retirement has quadrupled over the last 10 years, which as a 20-year-old about to graduate, that is absolutely terrifying to me. From 700,000 seniors to 2.8 million seniors in 2015, and still on the dramatic rise today. It's not just a millennial problem, it's an American problem, and it's a problem that affects 44 million of us. And that's national, but here at home, Oregon ranks 27th in the severity of student debt. 63% of our graduates end their educational career in debt, and the average of that debt is $27,697. So as we've discussed through this entire hearing, we can see that student debt is a huge problem. During the Obama administration, financial experts declared that student debt posed a risk to slow U.S. economic growth entirely. President Trump discussed student debt on the campaign trail and called it an anchor that prevents Americans from advancing. So both sides of the aisle can recognize the enormity of this problem, but very rarely is a reasonable idea to improve the situation ever introduced. And I believe that this is one of those rare occasions. I believe that this bill could help Oregonians, every Oregonian that carry the burden of student debt. And therefore, I urge you to pass this bill to help improve the lives of Oregonians who are working to improve their own. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? I do want to say thank you for coming. It's not always easy for students to make it. It's also great to have interns in our building. It helps us get our work done. And your thoughtful presentation was really helpful, so thank you.
Thank you.
I know you were talking to me, so.
you were the senior citizen part of the group, but yeah, thank you, too. So we also have Chris Vogel and Marcy Kelly. It's Margie, isn't it? Marcia. I don't know why I did that. Thanks, Marcia.
Chair Roblin, Vice Chair Linsicum.
Good job.
And members of the committee, first time through this session. My name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm the public policy advocate for the Oregon Women's Rights Coalition. And although this is a laudable cause to give a tax credit for interest on educational loans, we are not in a situation where tax credits should come into play. We are in a structural revenue problem created by ballot measure 5 and the transfer of funding public education from the locals to the state, and we've never come out of that structural problem. Until we get a structural solution for that ballot measure 5 flipping of education costs, I'm going to be anti-tax credits, yet another tax credit in this building.
Thank you.
Senator Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Chris Vogel. I'm the education policy chair for the League of Women Voters Action Committee. I see many of you in different roles, not just on this education committee. And as we look at these three bills, You know that the League of Women Voters is a 97-year-old organization. We've been around here a long time in the legislature. And we do believe that responsible government should maintain an equitable and flexible system of taxation. You all know about the Sears and Roebuck catalog that is the sieve for all of the tax credits and other money that flows out of the budget before we have an opportunity to allocate it. If we had just a portion of those tax credits available, we wouldn't have a $1.8 billion shortfall, or 1.6 after the current revenue forecast. And so student loans are indeed a problem. This is not the way to resolve it. This is a can that you kick down the road, and a huge addition to the sieve for what we're able to provide in revenue. You have my full testimony in writing.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you both. Is there anyone else in the audience that was just wanting to come up and testify because they hadn't had a chance to yet? I'm not seeing anyone. Okay, so we're going to close the public hearings on Senate Bills 439, 565, and 595, because I think that's everybody. That does it for the stuff we had today. Is there any questions or points of order or different issues? Good of the order stuff anybody has? If not, we're going to close the Senate Education Committee, and thank you all for being here. Thank you all for being here.